So let's welcome her into the program. And good afternoon.
Hi, Velma. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How's your afternoon going?
It's going well. And funny you mentioned my podcast, which I'll be recording again soon, because I was speaking to a real estate agent this week, and he, in him, by himself, will be an entire episode.
Oh, wow. How many episodes now, Wendy?
I had 40 episodes as season one.
Wow. In season one?
Yes, I got a bit excited.
I think so. It wouldn't want to be televised on television, because it'd be a very long season. So how many seasons, like, you do your season two, and then how many episodes? Would you leave it
to... When I bring season two back,
yes,
which I'm planning to do early into next year,
yep,
I might only do 20 episodes or so, because
yes,
I was doing one every single week.
Yes, I know. I remember the very first one. But, gee, I can't believe it. It's gone that fast too. 40 episodes. Wow.
Yeah,
well,
but it's good fun. There's always lots of shenanigans to talk about.
Oh, look, every day. Every day, even getting out of bed and just going around, it's always a lot of shenanigans. Now,
yes,
I was going to ask you to, you know, real estate is a very big topic at the moment, as we're all aware. Tell us about how the auction clearance rates are heading towards 2025.
Yes, Vilma, everybody likes to talk about real estate. Everyone's got an opinion about real estate.
Absolutely.
So we've just come off what you would call a long weekend, which is a cup day and so forth. So there weren't as many auctions being held. There's only just over 550 or so that were held. And so the clearance rate was only around about 61%. So what I have been noticing over the past few weeks, that the clearance rate, it did bump up into the 70s, but it's dropped back into the 60s. So the market at the moment is what I would call patchy. And what I mean by that is that some houses are selling and some houses aren't selling, and there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it per se. But what we are seeing is there's quite a lot of buoyancy in the market now amongst that price bracket for first home buyers because of the government incentive guarantee that they've brought out recently, changed it around, which we've spoken about previously.
So,
on the show.
Yeah, so what you're telling me is that since they've brought out that incentive, people are really getting into the marketplace now.
First-time buyers are, yes, because that's up to $950,000 or below, and they removed the income cap, so you don't have to be a certain income level or below, anyone that is a first-home buyer. And I think they've even changed it that you just don't have to have bought a house or owned a house in the last 10 years.
Mm.
So they've removed a lot of the, if you like, roadblocks that were there for first-home buyers. And as long as now you've got that 5% deposit, your government's going to guarantee the loan for you so you don't pay lender's mortgage insurance or LMI. And so you can buy a house up to $950,000. So that price bracket has been quite buoyant.
Okay, so it doesn't apply to if you've got a home, an existing home, and you wish
no.
to... No, only for first home buyers.
Correct.
Wow. Okay. So overall, how do you feel that the auction between now and towards the end of the year, how do you think that's going to play out?
Well, I think what we're seeing on the market right now is pretty much most of what we're going to see, other than what is going to be held over into the new year. I was talking to a real estate agent this morning, and their last auction is the first weekend or so of December. And so what it means for anybody that's looking to sell, if you haven't already had your home ready to basically go and start a campaign, the homes that are advertised at the moment are the homes that are available. So what we'll start to see are off-market opportunities, which is something I do talk about, and definitely when working with our clients as a buyer's advocate, we get access to lots of off-markets. I was actually just out this morning visiting a home for my clients who were measuring up before settlement, and we bought that one off-market. So you will see more opportunities, because when you're talking about getting a home ready and getting it on the market and selling it and using auction as your method of selling, there is a lead time required. So often it's that we have 3 weeks of open for inspections, and then we will auction on the fourth weekend. So if something's not ready to go, we are running out of, if you like, runway to have that campaign happen before Christmas. Because also throw into the mix that people start getting what I call Christmas brain, which means they don't start, they stop thinking about houses and they start thinking about Christmas get-togethers and lunches and dinners and catching up for drinks and all those type of things that people do to celebrate at the end of the year. So we get this change happen in the market where the focus moves off real estate and into social activities, and we are starting to get into that environment. And what it means for anyone like yourself, if you don't have your house ready right now and you need a little bit of extra time, like earlier in the year you can see that you could just bring your house on whenever, but we hit a timeline where houses start to get held over into 2026, and the real estate industry shuts down over that Christmas New Year period for the most part, and so many new auction campaigns won't be started or start to happen until at least the end of January after Australia Day into February. So we're hitting this period where if you're not already on the market, you kind of have to wait till next year if auction is how you want to do it.
Wow. So during the month of February, do you find that the market is a bit quiet?
No. February and March are actually the best times of year to sell your house because you get people, like I said, the market shuts down over that period and you get lots of buyers because buyers still want to buy homes, but they don't have as many opportunities. And so they come out of the gates, if you like, and they're really keen to buy something. You've got lots of people also that are moving school zones and looking to get their children into a different school zone. So they will buy homes that they can settle in February and March to move into a school zone. So the market tends to... every single year is different. Depends on other factors like cost of living and what's going on, interest rates, and all other. Obviously, it's like a real estate doesn't exist in its own little silo. It's impacted by what else is going on locally, at a country level, but also at a global level as well. So, I mean, between now and then, who knows what's going to happen? But at the moment, it looks like it'll come out quite strongly into the new year, which it generally does. It does have a little bit of momentum behind it because you've got people that haven't been able to look and find properties to buy, plus you've got all these other homes that are held over. So, depending on how many homes come onto the market, does influence the availability of stock, because what we have seen this year, which I believe does keep an underpin under the market, is that there is still more demand than there is supply of homes. The basic economics of supply and demand, where there's buyers that still aren't able to buy homes, then that's what makes a market maintain its value.
Absolutely. Now, I've always been a little bit concerned, not concerned, but I've always had doubt. You know, some people sell their homes during the week, and then you've got maybe Friday, Saturday, Sunday. When is a really good day? Is it better during the week or on the weekends?
That's a really good question, Vilma. What we seem to see is commercial real estate seems to sell during the week, and then Saturday, which is called game day in the real estate industry, is where they have the most options. But what we seem to see as we get into this period, as in spring and almost into summer, they will start to have options through the week. And there was a house auction last night, actually, a property that we were considering, a bit of failed building and pest, but that was taken off the list. Mm-hmm. But they moved, originally it was scheduled for the Saturday, but they moved it forward to the Thursday because I think they've got a lot of options on the Saturday. So I think if a person or a buyer is interested in a property, it doesn't really matter that much what day it is. I think if you are really keen on a home and you really want to be there and bid and so forth, you're going to show up. And if you're not available, you'll get someone like me as your buyer's advocate to go and bid for you. So the thing with the Saturday is that if you have a couple of properties you might be looking at and they're both auctioning on the same day, you're going to go to one before the other. So the second cap off the rank, if you like, may be disadvantaged by the fact they might be later in the day, whereas it's less common to be through the week. So you might be able to get in ahead of another property that might be auctioning on a Saturday. But as we move into Christmas and get closer, the Christmas this year is on a Thursday, I think. Well, there will be auctions on that Saturday just before, and there may well even be auctions on that Monday, Tuesday, because they run them more frequently through the week, the closer we get to Christmas, to try and move them through.
So that's the reasoning for that too.
Yeah.
If people are experiencing with their agent or whatever, and they might sort of turn around and say, oh, but you know, it's during the week, I don't know. But there's a reasoning for that madness, yeah?
That's the reasoning. So I believe the one that was auctioned last night was because the Saturday was full, so that effectively that bumped it off. So
yes.
How they choose them, I don't know. But certainly that's why there's only, if you look at it, any agency that has a number of properties that they're auctioning on a Saturday, they have to space them apart. They might run them at 10, 11, 12, some run them at 10, 11, 12, 30. I don't know what the run reason that is. Agencies just do it how they do it. So they've got to get from one to the next to the next to the next. That's why they space them out like that. So you've only got a certain number of time slots. And what we see coming into this time of year, we see auctions at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, and you'll see them at 9 or 9.30 in the morning on a Saturday. Now, I would probably suggest those aren't the premium times to be auctioning your home. It's probably in that sort of 11-ish to 1 would be the premium spot, but they would get taken first because they're booking these auctions in weeks and weeks in advance. And so what's left of the other time slots, when they're full, you're going to have to move to another day.
Well, there you go. So that's very important. Now, this comes up quite a bit when we do have a chat with you. Underquoting, refreshed guidelines has been published by the Consumer Affairs to try to stamp out the underquoting. Now, tell us, what is underquoting? I mean, I can't understand why people still don't get it. But anyway, why is it an issue and what are the most recent changes?
Well, I think when you say you don't understand why people don't get underquoted, I think sometimes people coming, as a buyer coming into a market, take things at face value and they'll see a guide price. So guide price is basically price X, price Y. And they think that they can buy real estate under the guide price or at the bottom of the guide price. It really does depend on the type of property and what is going on in any market. So I can tell you that when a property is put on the market and there's a guide price, the vendor's expectation or where the reserve is almost always going to be at the top, towards the top, or even over the top. They don't hang around down the bottom. The bottom bit is actually not for the vendor. The bottom bit is for all the bits and pieces that the real estate agent do, which I've covered in my podcast. You can go listen to the episode there about underquoting. Underquoting is where you materially know the value of a home, but you price it to the market less than where you know it's going to sell. So the reason that, and I fully understand and appreciate this for buyers, why it frustrates them, is because you are wasting your time, you're wasting your money, you're wasting your energy on a home that you potentially may never have been able to afford. Where, let's just pick a figure, let's say it's advertised $9,990, right? So those type of homes, I mean, that's a good example, actually, because that straddles the $950 or less for a first-time buyer. So they've got to match the $950, and they're looking at homes that are $9,990. The likelihood is it's above what they can afford, because the vendor's likely at $990 or a million. But because it's got $900 on the bottom of the guide price, a first-time buyer with a $950 budget might go, well, I can go and look at that. But the reality is you're unlikely to ever have been able to afford it. But you would have engaged a conveyancer to look at your paperwork, so there's time and cost there. You would have likely, or you should have done, a building and pest inspection, so there's time and cost there. There's your own time going to look at the properties, or and even the emotional angst, all that kind of stuff. And when you're working with us as well, as your advocate, there's an investment there to sort all these things out. So there's a whole raft of reasons why real estate agents do it, and in my opinion, it's never going to get stamped out because there are too many players in the industry that benefit from it.
Mm.
But that is what underquoting is. It's where you're not pricing a property where you know it is going to likely sell. Now, having said that, on any given property that is put up for sale, you've got the price that the vendor's reserve is set at, and then you've got where the buyer competition may take it. So there's two moving parts, if you like. So if, let's say for the material that it was $9,990, and let's say the vendor's reserve was $950. So if it hit $950 and the vendor was happy to sell it at that, well then that's one side of the equation. However, what we see with auctions in particular, you get competition, so the buyers take it over that. So that's not an underquoted scenario there, because that the vendor would have sold it within the range, and that's what they legally are supposed to do. But where that gets taken to $1,000,000, $1,050,000 under competition, and that happens very, very commonly because people compete on properties, that's not an underquote. That's just the market competition and sentiment where it is at that given time. So the changes that have come out just recently are around, I suppose, the wording or the intention behind what a guide price or a statement of information is supposed to indicate. So the whole reason why a statement of information was included by Consumer Affairs as a piece of paper that an agent must prepare when they're putting a home on the sale, it's to give that guide and guidance to a buyer. And what it is supposed to do, it is supposed to reference three comparable properties that have sold in the last 6 months within 2 kilometres of that home that is for sale. So the little bits of trickery, shall I call it, or colouring outside of the lines that I see real estate agents do is particularly around the 2 kilometre scenario is if a property is on the border or close to the border of another suburb and that other suburb is a lower price suburb, they can still pull it in as a comparable, because if it's sold within the last 6 months and it's within 2 kilometres, they can reference it. And that's a little trick they do, because they'll reference homes in a cheaper suburb. But the main change that they've done in here that they've just announced is around what is actually comparable to the home that is for sale. And it's things like a renovated house versus a non-renovated house. And I see this, and you really have to know, have your wits about you to some degree to be able to read a guide price and then go and do your due diligence, which you as a buyer should be doing, to be able to compare apples with apples with apples. Because if you're not doing that and you're just looking at what they're saying and comparing, and because it's things like it's on a main road but the one being sold is not. It was in a poorer state than the one being sold. It doesn't have the second bathroom, which the one you're looking at does have. These things all materially make a difference to the price a home's going to achieve, but you have to do your own diligence, due diligence on it. So they're trying to bring more, I guess, structure around what the agent is supposed to be doing, but I always say the water gets around the rock.
Mm. And And what a rock. I like that one.
It does.
Yeah, good on you. That's a very good analysis. Fantastic. Now, and I think also, too, a lot more transparency. I don't know. Look, you know, this is my thoughts anyway. I wanted to share with you, but, you know, you're selling a property. You can see how it is. But the way sometimes they can hype it up or use their own way of putting words together can be very misleading. And like you just said earlier, you know, you might be looking at a property and you might think, oh, gee, that's nice, but, oh, I didn't get it, or it's a little bit overpriced. And then they take you to another property and they try to match it and compare your thoughts, you know, like the other property that you just seen. But they're both in contrast with each other. But it's just the way they make their own visualization to you so they can get you to buy the home. So it's a very unusual scenarios when you're dealing with real estate agents. I know they have their best intentions, and you know, people want to buy, people want to sell. But I think this day and age, people are getting a lot more sharper and smarter, and certainly they've got their wits about them. Yes, you might get a couple of cattle coming through that have no idea, that's been feeding off the grass, and they have no idea, they got the blinkers on. But at the end of the day, people are becoming a lot more savvy when it comes to real estate. But I don't think you'll ever outdo them, because they're always one step ahead, especially when it comes to people that are first-time buyers, or even if they buy a second home, people sometimes are not as shrewd as what they should be. Yeah?
They're absolutely not. And you've hit the nail on the head there, Vilma. It's a first time. They've never done that before. And we work with lots of first-time buyers, and I describe them as smart people. They've just never done that before.
Mm.
And so they're venturing into waters where they don't know what they're doing, and there are enough people in those waters who are prepared to part them from their money.
Mm.
Because people as a buyer need to understand that real estate agent, no matter how lovely they are to you, they are not working for you. They are not paid by you. They are paid by the seller. And that is who they're interest lies with. So they will do what they need to do to get the property sold. They also are looking to sell the stock on their shelf. So they're going to try and get you to buy what they've got for sale, because that's how they get paid. And so you just do need to have those wits about you. And even people that might have purchased before, they may not have done it recently.
Correct.
And lots of people have lots of different skill sets, and many people just aren't able to negotiate. They can't keep their mouth shut. And they say to... They can't. I had a client that went in and was talking to a real estate agent and then had to fess up to me about the things that he had said.
Mm.
And I'm saying, please stop talking.
Yes, exactly, because you lose the focus.
You lose the focus. You let your guard down. You are talking about dealing with trained negotiators. They know how to get you talking, find out the information they need, and a lot of people are not comfortable in that situation. They're not comfortable negotiating. They don't like being put under pressure, because it is a high-pressure cooker situation, and it's deliberately designed that way because people get emotional, they panic, they make decisions where they don't have the... That's what happens at an auction. You don't have the time to make decisions that are measured and you've thought about, because they're constantly pushing you. That's why you work with us, because we don't get emotional about it, and I love auction.
Yeah, well, auction is quite a theatrical time, and you've got to make it happen. So let's get back to the first home buyers or the first home grantee schemes, the new changes that have come into effect as from the 1st of October for the first home buyers. So what are the changes that impact, and what do you think these changes will have on, number one, the first home buyers and their ability to buy a home, and two, the overall real estate market? As I'm aware, it's doing quite well.
Yes. So the key changes are there's now no place limit. So previously there were caps on the number of people or buyers they would accept into the scheme at any given time. So that's gone. It's a free-for-all. So if you've got your 5% deposit saved up now, then you're good to go. They removed that income cap. So previously, first-time buyers with higher incomes were not able to access the scheme. So I think it was around about $125,000 as a cap, and that's been taken away. So you've got that there's no limit on places now. There's no cap on how much the first-time buyer who qualifies can earn. And then they did increase the price that of the property that you can buy. I believe it was around about $800 previously. So they've increased that to $950 for Melbourne and regional Victorian centres, and then $650,000 in other parts of Victoria. And the government is guaranteeing the 20% deposit. So when you anyone else looking to buy a property and you're needing to go and get a loan from a bank, the bank wants you to give them $20,000, 20% as your deposit. If you so that you're got an 80%, they're lending you 80%, and you're putting 20% to the deal. If those percentages drop in that you're contributing less, then it triggers what's called LMI, which is Lenders Mortgage Insurance. Now, make no mistake, that does not insure you as the buyer. That insures the bank that if something goes sideways and they have to go and recover their debt or their loan, then they're insured from that. So the government under this scheme is stepping in and they are guaranteeing that 20%. So the home buyer who has applied and qualified under this first, the federal government first home guarantee scheme only has to have that 5%. And I know that our inquiry from first home buyers who were now eligible for this scheme skyrocketed over the past few weeks. So it is certainly bringing more heat into a market which still does not have enough supply of housing stock. And it's an ongoing issue. We've spoken about it before, Vilma, how the government, they do something like this, which is fantastic. But the other side of the coin is that they're not providing enough housing or building enough houses to meet their things that they have said that they are going to do and have promised us. That's not happening.
Okay, well, there you go. Now, do you see any pitfalls in regards to this for the first-home buyers? And who don't you understand, well, I suppose, who doesn't understand the ongoing costs of a home ownership?
Yes, and this is the thing that I want any first-home buyers listening and considering taking part in these type of schemes to understand. Buying a home and going to a bank and getting your mortgage, that is one part of the equation, and then you will then obviously have to maintain and make your mortgage repayments every fortnight or monthly or however often you're going to do it. What first-time buyers don't understand, because they have no frame of reference, because they've not owned a home before, is the ongoing cost of home ownership. And I believe that that is going to catch a lot of first-home buyers out, because you've got things like rates. You're going to have a council send you a rates notice that you're expected to pay. You are going to have an increased water bill because now you're not just paying for your usage, you're also paying for sewage and connection charges and things like that. If you've purchased a home and there is a high probability, if it's $950 or less, depending on where you buy, it's going to have an owner's corporation that is required to be paid, then you're going to be up for owner's corporation fees. And I am seeing... We're hunting for several clients at the moment that with their budgets and what they're looking for are properties that are going to be attracting an owner's corporation scheme. That's how the home is offered. And I'm seeing the owner's corporation fees are going up and up and up. And the main reason for that is insurances. We were told about a home recently that's in a three-bedroom apartment and the annual owner's corporation fees on it are $12,000 a year.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's a lot.
So it is a lot. So now $4,000 or so actually is fairly reasonable. And you go, that's wild that you can say that $4,000 a year and an owner corporation fee is reasonable. But that is actually you're heading towards being cheap at the moment. That can be $5,000, $6,000, up to $7,000, $8,000. And once you buy a home that has an owner's corporation on it, you're up for that every single year. So first-time buyers go, what's this? Well, I don't understand what this is. Well, you need to make sure you educate yourself about all the ongoing fees and costs of home ownership. But also the other side of it is it's all very well with your 5% deposit to then be able to go and buy a home, but understand and do your numbers on what your monthly cost is to service that mortgage.
It's a lot.
Rates go up and down, as we've seen.
Well, my rates this year have, certainly gone up. Car insurance has gone up. And don't forget, as we spoke about it a couple of weeks back, the home insurance, the rates, even though it's collected by the council, but I think I've probably looked at about $300 to $400 more than what I would normally pay last year because of these, two levies, actually. And I think it's just outrageous. And people are screaming out there. And, just how things have turned in the past, say, 5 years on property and paying out a lot more money from our pockets when, the government does know that it's very hard out there for a lot of people, and yet we seem to be getting more tariffs on this, and that because they want their money back, yeah?
It's 100% true because we're talking about buying a house and there's the ongoing, there's the actual cost of buying plus the ongoing cost of buying plus all the other costs that you just mentioned there of just living now and living in, particularly here in Victoria, in a state that is broke and that they are taxing left, right and centre to try and pull that money back. And we can't control it.
Well, I did a little bit of a budget myself, but just to see what it would be like just to to enter your home for the 12 months that you're living there and how much would it cost apart from food, petrol, gardening, and just to keep up your house with all the little bills like electricity, gas, probably a little bit of maintenance, depends, but let's take out that from there. And then we've also got the rates. You've also got the insurance and there's other little expenditures. And I think the average, and we're talking the average person now, it probably cost, and if you're not working, it's money, right? Probably about $10,000 just to keep that house afloat on a yearly basis.
Yes.
Outlay, and we're not talking about your Turex, Perand and all of those. I'm sure there's probably be double, but just the average person in the northern or western or whatever suburbs, it probably would cost $10,000 to $12,000 between, maybe your internet and getting your Optus and all of these, all the bits and pieces, and that's quite a lot, and especially if you're not working.
It is a lot, and that's one of the things you mentioned there was that maintenance, because if you have been renting a home, your rental provider, landlord, is the one that has been fixing things, well, they should be, fixing things for you. So you now own a house. Guess who has to fix things?
Yourself.
You, because you're the owner.
Yes, and as I said, to have a home today, you need to have a fairly decent income, but if you weren't working or you were unwell and you were living on some support, $10,000 out of a pension, well, how much is a pension today? It's about $24,000 or maybe just a bit under or a bit over. You're not left with much to buy food and keep yourself warm and cool in summer, are you?
No, it's a huge chunk of that, isn't it?
It is, and I've just worked it out, and I just wanted to do that just to see what it's about. So, I think having people like yourself to educate and make people understand about buying your first home and making sure that you're fully aware of all the expenditures that come with it when buying your first home, not about electricity and all of that, but all the other implications like, the insurances and all other cost factors. It is so important. Yes, it's a great scheme, 5%, $950,000 home. That's all great. But there's also a lot of hidden agendas that people need to be aware of.
There are, and it's one of the, a few of the modules actually in the Home Buying Secrets program, we talk about that. We talk about the costs and things you need to factor in because if you don't have any awareness of it, you can't know what you don't know.
Exactly. So I think we've kind of covered the pitfalls on the first home buyers and the cost of an ownership. So I think we've done all of that. But you've also introduced a buying segments course, which is self-paced learning course for everyone looking at to buy a home, which I think people should take this offer up. I remember a good friend of mine didn't know very much about real estate, and by doing a proper course and to understand it at her leisure, of course, she made some very good decisions and has now got a nice little portfolio. So I think it's always best to educate yourself in any field, really, and to know the ins and outs. So you've also got that as well. So just tell us a little bit about that course.
Yes, Vilma, that's my Home Buying Secrets program. So it is a course that it is self-paced, as you said, and I have taken my almost 30 years of experience and put it into individualized modules, and you follow the bouncing ball at your own pace, and it educates you on everything you need to know to buy a home. Things like we've talked about, dealing with real estate agents, what the ongoing costs are, from go to woe, it's all mapped out for you, and we include videos, transcripts, workbooks, scripts and things like that. So it's all there for you.
Fantastic.
Because buying real estate and you getting it wrong is very expensive.
It'd be a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. Well, we do have an e-book for our listeners this afternoon, and all you need to do is go to Chamberlain Advocates, or one word, .com.au/NorthwestFM, and you can inquire and have a chat, but you can also inquire at chamberlainadvocates.com.au, and please try and obtain that e-book, because that will help you. But I know that we'll be speaking to Wendy again, and so important that you get it right and understand as much as you can, and having an advocate working on your side makes a very, very big difference, and it can really help you make the right decision and someone having your back. Well, Wendy, thank you very, very much for your time this afternoon. It's always appreciated, and you have a nice week ahead of you.
Thanks, Vilma. I love coming on and chatting. We always have good conversations.
Absolutely. Now, I was just about to say, you've got some auctions on the weekend?
I do. I've got one tomorrow in Maidstone.
Oh, lovely. Well, I wish you all the best with that one. So
you
take care, and have a nice week ahead of you. And thank you. Always, it's always a pleasure and very interesting.
Thanks, Vilma.